Star Wars Action News presents Republic Forces Radio Network, bringing you coverage of Star Wars, The Clone Wars. Our hosts will review the toys, books, comics, games, and all things related to the Clone Wars animated series. And after each new episode airs on Cartoon Network, our hosts will recap and review the show. And we want to hear your thoughts on The Clone Wars. Call us at 415-508-JEDI every Saturday after a new episode, and your call may be played on the air.
Welcome back to Republic Forces Radio Network, continuing our discussion of all things Clone Wars. Back to talk about episode 3 of season 4, Prisoners. And joining me in this episode, as they were for the beginning of this arc, are Jen.
Hey, guys.
Barrett.
Hey, everybody. It's Barrett, Master Collect 'em All from the forums, your Swan Holocron Enhancer, back for another episode of The Clone Wars. It's good to be back.
And Arnie.
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Landshark.
Wow. You know, I thought you were just going to keep the 80s references to Swan and not try to bring him so much in, but bingo somebody. That's not even 80s. That's like,
I think that's actually 70s.
It's like 70s SNL. You're scaring me there. We are going to be discussing Prisoners, Episode 3, the culmination to our Mon Cala and Quarren arc.
Let's have a brief plot summary.
A last gasp of hope. After the assassination of his father and the fall of his kingdom beneath a planetary civil war, Mon Cala Prince Lee Char has gone into hiding with Padawan Ahsoka Tano as his only protector. With his armies captured and friends imprisoned, the situation seems hopeless for the prince. Count Dooku commands his sinister agent Riff Tamson to use any means necessary to bring Prince Lee Char out of hiding, for he knows that hope does remain as long as the prince is alive.
We begin this episode with the interrogation of Kit Fisto, Anakin, Padme, and Jar Jar Binks at the hands, or fins, of Riff Tamson, in an attempt to gain any information about the location of the missing Mon Cal Prince. And Tamson shows he's willing to use any means necessary.
He is very dangerous.
Elsewhere, Ahsoka and Lee Char are hiding in the city, but the prince has come to a conclusion about how to win this fight.
I know what I must do. The Mon Cala and Quarren people must be reunited. Count all the prisoners. Mon Cala, Gungans, clones. If we all fought together, we would outnumber our opponent. We need Captain Ackbar, and I think I know where to find him.
Meanwhile, it's time for the conference call with Dooku to give the progress report. Tamson tells Dooku that the Jedi still haven't given him anything to go on. When the Quarren leader argues the battle is finished and now the Quarren should take the lead and start to rebuild, he learns what he's gotten his people into, and that Tamson has brought friends.
Tamson, have your soldiers arrived?
Soldiers?
Yes, Count. We now have the city under our control.
Good. Continue as planned.
Boy, this deal is getting worse all the time, isn't it? Ahsoka and the prince find the prison camp where the Mon Cal, Gungans, and clones are being held. And after a brief encouragement of his people, they are led to someone who will be very happy to see them, according to Captain Monk. Elsewhere, we find that Tamson is a very brutal and ruthless interrogator. When Anakin and Kit fail to answer his questions, he attacks Padme and bites her helmet, causing a leak. Now, if they have any information for him, he will get it sooner rather than later. In the prison camp, the prince meets with Ackbar and organizes an uprising. Believing that he can appeal to the Quarren to join them, he gives a bold and assuming command to signal the beginning of the uprising.
When a Quarren attacks our enemy, that will be your sign.
Suddenly, the prisoners are surrounded, and though Ahsoka is ready to fight, the prince requests to speak with the leadership. Elsewhere, Tamson gets the call that the prince has been taken into custody and wants to talk. Tamson says he'll meet him in the throne room. When Nos Sarai questions this, Tamson reveals that it has always been the plan that he would be the rulership of Mon Cal. Furthermore, he refuses to help Padme.
Wait! The prisoner! You have to save her!
No, I don't.
In a desperate attempt to save Padme, Kit and Anakin attempt to create a bubble around Padme's helmet with the Force. Force bubbles. I know this one. However, an eel breaks Anakin's concentration, and when it seems she's done for, Jar Jar seals the break with a well-placed loogie?
It's a Gungan waterproofing. It's a why we swim so good.
Elsewhere, the prince is brought before Tamsin, and when he demands the release of his people, he is told that everyone on the planet are slaves under Tamsin's rule. The prince says that all his people will support him, meaning all those under the sea. However, Tamsin laughs this off as he sees the Quorn only as cowards who will not jeopardize their position. Knowing that the prince gives an image of hope to his people, Tamsin plans a public execution for him. As all the captives are gathered for the execution, Anakin and Ahsoka are reunited.
Good job protecting the prince.
It's all part of the plan, Master.
I was hoping you were going to say that. Anything I can do?
Unfortunately, this time, it's out of our hands.
I'm not sure I like this plan after all.
As the execution is about to begin, the Quorn secretly arm the slaves, and Nos Sarai rescues the prince. In the following battle, we see former enemies uniting to fight the Separatist droids, and though there are many casualties, it comes down to the prince versus Tamsin and his exploding knives.
I killed your father without pity or mercy.
And I'll return the favor!
While grappling Tamsin, Lee Char manages to grab one of his knives and throws it at him. It sticks in his chest where it is wedged in his armor. As it beeps, showing explosion is imminent, Tamsin charges the prince, who fires at him with the blaster staff. One of the blaster bolts strikes true, and Tamsin is blown to chum. We then see Lee Char crowned king of Mon Calamari, and we are left with the applause of the Mon Cal and Quarren alike.
As representative of the Quarren people, I pledge our loyalty to you.
And as your king, I pledge my loyalty to all people of Mon Cala.
Very interesting episode. Let's go around and get everybody's kind of general thoughts on it before we get going.
This whole arc has not been my favorite. It's not a bad group of episodes, but it's not my favorite either. This was... it had some interesting stuff in it. I liked... some of the stuff in the battle, we'll get to that later. They had some really interesting musical cues that I really liked, and it was still visually gorgeous. I just found the plot kind of canned a little bit, like very predictable in a lot of ways. So it wasn't as exciting as it probably could have been, but it was, like Arnie was saying last week, it's kind of a par episode. It was okay. It wasn't great. It wasn't awful.
And I'm going to agree with Jen agreeing with me. This episode was completely average, right on par. Still a little bit not what I wanted for a season opener, but I will say, watching this Friday night, I just couldn't take it anymore. Saturday night was sushi. Some eel, some calamari, all rolled in some rice.
And, you know, I have to say that this episode wasn't bad. It was good. I really think that this arc could have been told in two stories instead of three. You know, they should have took some of the elements from the second part, from the Gungans coming in to fight for them, and kind of shorten that up a little bit and just made this the second part and the third part just one episode, because we really didn't need all these battles to kind of culminate into nothing. You know, the last battle in this episode is really all what we really needed. We needed the first episode battle and this one to kind of have Lee Char kind of grow up and become a leader, instead of having him doubt himself in the second episode. So I think it was all right. I think it was all right. The musical cues were great. A lot of the visuals were really good. And it kind of wrapped it up in a neat little package, you know. So what else could I ask for?
But I agree with you guys. This is an episode that honestly I felt unnecessary, in an arc that felt really kind of halfway there. It wasn't a good season opener. The entire second episode, why the Gungans were there, they really only wanted Jar Jar there to spit on Padme's helmet in the third episode. That's the only reason that the Gungans were there.
I am sure there are some fetishists out there that would pay good money to see Jar Jar spit on Padme.
I'm sure there are. But being that, I mean, they could have easily made it Padme and Jar Jar that were there overseeing things in the first episode and had Anakin show up later, and we wouldn't have needed that second episode at all, except for maybe to introduce the character that we're going to see in next week's episode, who is another Gungan that apparently looks like Jar Jar. But we'll get to that when we talk about our preview. Overall, pretty episode. My mind couldn't get away from what Barrett said about the rendering panel at Comic-Con when they said that they just kind of cheated on the water. And they did cheat on the water. They just made it dark and really hard to see in places. And that bothered me from the first episode because, I mean, Mon Cal fell when a tube broke. They fell underwater.
That just says to me they don't care anymore. And I want to know how clones can possibly swim in that armor.
It's styrofoam.
I almost thought there was the scene in the prison where like a clone swims up and says, we need to talk. And I had to look. I mean, is it really wearing armor, or was he wearing an armor colored like bodysuit? Because it looked like the armor was bending in weird ways. I overanalyzed the water this week based on all the comments we got on the forums, and so it just came to truly bother me now that I've noticed it. It's like the matte lines in the actual Star Wars movies. You don't notice it till someone points it out, then that's all you can see. You know, we kind of talked on the visuals last week, but I'd like to build off of that and revisit that discussion a little bit, because some of the things that our listeners are saying in the forums really hit home as something that I missed last week, which was how not watery it was and how everybody just seemed to be flying, even though, Jen talked about the swimming and how you couldn't do that as a biped, but... you know, watching it this week after reading those comments, yeah, there's no waves, there's no bubbles, and people are swinging things, and there should be resistance from the water, and things are hard to throw underwater and all of that. So yeah, I got to give a shout out to every forum member who brought this up, because when I watched it this week with that eye, it might as well have been people flying in the sky or as well as underwater. The only thing underwater about it was the whole helmet oxygen thing.
Yeah, that was really brought home for me in the final moments of the episode when everybody starts to clap underwater. Like, that was just... how does that work?
But, and Jar Jar can speak underwater.
But he can't hear. Not really sure how that works.
And he was called an amphibian. So we are correct about the amphibian part of him.
We are, the writers aren't.
Yeah, they're correct about calling him an amphibian when everybody else does, but they're not correct about what amphibians can and can't do.
Jen needs to educate them.
All right, well, let's kind of take it from sort of the beginning. Well, we are kind of there. We've got the clone swimming up while they're in prison. And they're in prison because the prince, who is free, thinks it's a good idea to break into the prison. That makes sense, right?
He got in here. Does he have a plan for getting out?
Yeah, that bothered me. I was having a little bit of difficulty accepting that this guy was a good leader at that point because it made no sense. I mean, I think he had broken in and he could get back out or get his people out. That made better sense to me. But the fact he goes in there and just is like, okay, take me to your leader. That was kind of a really big gamble. Like, I don't know if he would have gotten away with that if he hadn't just happened to be able to sway the Quarren. That was a really big gamble he took.
Very good. They don't have a shoot on sight order there. Did we see Quarren get arrested last time? Because the prince is talking about how the Quarren prisoners and the Mon Cala prisoners need to team to up. And I thought the Quarren were the ones taking the prisoners, not being taken prisoner.
No, we didn't see any Quarren get arrested. I think he may have meant the Quarren guards.
What in the world would make him think, hey, let's get the guards to rally on our side? I thought he was saying that there were Quarren prisoners, and I thought I missed it, or what?
I think he was using it as like an analogy, like they are prisoners, quote unquote, of the Riff Tamsin guy, because he has them under his control. It was kind of not worded well.
Well, as far as Lee Char goes, he's really actually getting the deity. He's like playing Moses, isn't he? You know, anytime anybody says, let my people go, I'm always thinking of Moses. You know, and the Pharaoh. And I think it was part of his plan to show his people that he was still alive, first of all, because they were kind of doubting if he was still around or not. They kind of mentioned that Captain Ackbar was telling them that he's still around, but nobody really knew. So he kind of had to go in there and show everybody that he was alive. And I don't think escape was his plan. I thought it was part of his plan to get in front of Tamsin and Nos Sarai so he could kind of convince Nos Sarai to be on his side. And I don't think escape was his plan. So I think it kind of worked out really well. I like the fact that he grew up really fast. You know, I didn't like the second guessing himself in the last couple episodes, although it only took a few battles for him to kind of grow up and figure out what he needed to do in order to lead his people and unite them against this common enemy. But the way that it played out, I was saying, okay, yeah, you know, he's been through a couple battles, you know, he's seen a little war, you know, and you can grow up pretty fast when it comes to that. So I liked the way that they're trying to accelerate the plot, you know, because, you know, they knew that they had to kind of close the storyline. And I thought it was pretty good. You know, he gets into the jail or to the holding cell, which I had a kind of a question about this holding cell. Did, you know, water is kind of an open space, you know, and they have some scenes where he's swimming through the prisoners, but you don't see the electricity around. So is it kind of like, is it a dome? Is it just electricity in the water? You know, it was kind of interesting about that. But as far as his overall plan goes, it all made sense. I mean, did it make sense?
I think he kind of lucked into it, that he was planning on going to talk to the Quarren leader, that he went there because he was captured and was brought before him, and Tamsin kind of worked out. I don't know that it was his plan, but it all worked out in the wash. So at the same time that the Mon Cal prince is breaking into prison, the Jedi and the senators are being tortured for information about a prince who's on the run hiding somewhere because they know exactly where he's at. That was a little strange. For being such a mastermind, that he thought that they had like one place that they were hiding was a little bit odd.
No. It was odd. Did anybody get Reservoir Dogs from that? Because he was like, I don't care what you know. I would torch you anyway. You know, and I kept waiting for that song to come on, you know, him doing the dance, sliding backwards.
You know, thank you, Baron. I had that line in my mind from Reservoir Dogs, and I just couldn't place it. But yes, that is exactly what I was thinking.
So his big masterful move of how he's going to get the Jedi to talk is to bite down on Padme's helmet and make it spring a leak so that Anakin will tell them what he doesn't know. Just so he can get the call that, hey, we caught him. So was this mostly just to show us what a complete jerk that this guy was, just so gung-ho going to do it his way that he would kill somebody and not even think about it? Because he doesn't help her once he gets what he wants.
Well, I was thinking he's the villain, right? I'm honestly surprised he didn't just kill one of the prisoners and then say, all right, I'll kill the next if you don't talk. So the fact that he only bit down on the helmet, and I thought they were trying to say, hey, look how tough he is. He just bit through a helmet.
I really thought for a second there that they were going to make Anakin kind of go a little wiggy, go a little dark side there in front of everybody, which would have been an interesting way for things to go. But no, it's okay. Jar Jar can spit on her.
That was what bothered me about this scene, is I figured they're not going to kill Padme, obviously, but he's threatening her, and I thought Anakin was going to go berserk or at least start screaming or something, do something with the Force, and instead he just kind of gets electrocuted a lot and flails. So I don't know where they were going with that, except I guess it was just to show how nasty Riff Tamsin was. But I feel like it felt kind of flat. I feel like they missed some opportunities there. They could have just had, even just to have Anakin try to Force choke or just anything, I feel like they kind of missed an opportunity there.
Yeah, that's one thing that I was really expecting in that scene. With the way the preview left off last week, I thought, oh, he's going to put Padme on the rack and Anakin's going to do something, and that might show Kit that he's kind of tending to go this way. He has a little bit of darkness in him, but no, not at all. The only thing that Kit gives him crap for is talking too much.
They really did release Kit from his duties, didn't they? I mean, he really didn't do anything here. He was kind of like Jar Jar, you know. He was just kind of a one-liner here and there. And he does bring back the Force bubbles, though, for Jerry. I know Jerry saw that and he loved it, you know, because it was more controlled Force bubble around Padme's helmet. And I kept thinking, you know, they should use the Force bubbles around themselves to free them from their electric eel torture prison, you know, not just let Padme breathe. But, you know, that never occurred to them. I don't know if using the Force underwater takes more concentration or you have to be more skillful with using the Force because, you know, Arnie, like you said, they're swinging around and, you know, they're moving like they're not underwater. So they should be able to use the Force, like Force pushes and stuff like that. But they just never thought about doing that. And I just thought that was pretty interesting.
Well, most of them spend their time above the water. Kit's really the only one that we know of who's an underwater species, except for, well, his dead Padawan.
Yes, and it was a missed opportunity for Kit to train Anakin in using the Force underwater because he should be a master at that. And instead, you know, he's just kind of teaching him how to meditate to be still so he doesn't get electrocuted.
So he cracks the helmet. And they use the Force bubble, and then, of course, Anakin gets electrocuted in the water. And Jar Jar hocks a loogie, and I am laughing so hard. I cannot believe he just spit on the former queen.
Did any of you guys hear what he calls it? He said, like, this is a Gungan something, and I couldn't hear him. I listened to it, like, three times, and I cannot tell what he said. Like, what the heck was that?
Waterproofing.
Waterproofing, okay.
But he also says that that is the reason why Gungans swim so well. So do they spit on themselves? Or do they inhale,
that's what I wonder.
Do they inhale the water and it's slick on the inside so they're able to move around? I didn't understand that.
Maybe they're just all covered in their own snot. They're like a snotty kid in the playground.
I didn't understand why he would say that would help them swim better, but I could believe that's how that they waterproof their domes in you know, the Gungan city. So it kind of was like, huh, but has this ever been said before? Is this an established thing that the Gungans can do?
I'm pretty sure that if anybody had postulated that Gungans spit to waterproof things, we would have heard about this before.
Yeah, it was pretty nasty. It truly was that. I just couldn't believe it. But you know what I loved is Padme's facial reaction. Like, she reacted perfectly to it. She's grossed out. She's kind of mad about it. And then she realizes what was going on the whole time. But is it me or did Jar Jar's phlegm loogie actually boomerang back? Because the crack was on the side not facing him. It was like a curve loogie.
It was.
Yeah, it's so weird, and the way it looks in a couple of the freeze frames that I got, it's like it moves. It's in a different place on our helmet a couple of times too. It's a little odd,
you know. And you talk about the Padme's facial expression after she got loogied on, but did you see Kit's facial expression? It had to be everybody who was watching the episode just kind of looking down and shaking their head. Oh.
This is what happens when you put Jar Jar in an episode, is what Kit's thinking. I'm here to show off my pecs and Jar Jar spitting loogies.
It's funny that you say that, Arnie, because I thought the exact same thing. It's not the Gungans that bother me so much. It's not the whole race of warriors. It's Jar Jar.
You're not speciest. You just don't like him.
Yeah, it's just Jar Jar that gets on me. It's not the whole Gungan warriors. You know, it's just something about Jar Jar, and I don't know what it is.
Can I also ask, why didn't Jar Jar spit the loogie to begin with? Why did they have to wait until after the whole Force bubble thing?
Well, he did try to say something to Anakin before they tried that, and Anakin kind of said, shut up, I'm done hearing you. So he kind of brushed him off, but I don't know, it was just odd. So the prince is before the Quarren leader and Riff Tamsin, and he makes a very impassionate speech, and we kind of get the idea that maybe it's working, but we find out that Tamsin has brought people from his own race, and the entire plan all along was for him to rule Mon Cala. Dun dun dun.
And then the Quarren leader says, the steel's getting worse all the time.
I know. If he didn't use those exact words, it was pretty much just like that, wasn't it?
It's all I could think of was he's this episode's Lando.
So Prince is scheduled for a public execution. But things start to turn. The Quarren start whispering behind Tamsin's back to help the Mon Cal and clones and Gungans escape. And in the midst of the Prince's execution, escape is what they do, starting with the Quarren leader who, just like squids and octopus, we saw this kind of in the first or second battle. We saw there was ink everywhere. We didn't see how. Now we know they shoot they shoot ink out of their mouths like squid. Who knew? Jen's going to tell us how physically that's impossible to do.
No, I actually thought it was really cool. I liked it. It was a little bio geek moment for me because I thought they were referencing the squid. So I thought it was neat and it worked and it was a plot device and it worked well. I liked it.
Isn't that something that squids do anyway to deter predators or try to trick predators so they could get away? So it did work in that fact. And the sharks were all confused with even the squid ink. But I just kept thinking, what is that squid ink made of? Is it kind of like puke? You know, I just thought it was interesting that it's coming out of its mouth. Gargar, Jar Jar is upchucking phlegm. So, you know, they kind of kept on a central theme of nastiness in this episode.
And that theme will hold all the way to the end. But in the midst of this, the Quarren have rearmed everyone and let them know that they're with them. And when the time comes, a big firefight underwater starts. And, okay, did anybody else notice that Ackbar's laser stick was his accessory from his 1983 figure?
Yes, I'm a big toy geek, and I was like, oh, that rocks!
I love that. That was probably one of my favorite moments in this episode, that they did a callback to the old vintage figure. That was great.
That accessory was also included in the new vintage figure that was released this year on the vintage, you know, the new vintage collection. He was released with that wand as well.
Does he? I still haven't gotten that figure because I could walk out and get 20 of them if I wanted to.
He has the pointer and he has the vanity mirror. But yeah, it was funny that it looked like his big pointing stick and it was a weapon this time. And it definitely had that vintagey feel, even though, yeah, it was on the new figure as well.
Did anybody catch the modified Luke Skywalker theme in that scene, though, during the fight? I really liked that. Usually they don't have a whole lot of Williams music in the episodes, at least that I noticed. And that really struck me, and I liked it a lot. I thought it was cool.
You know, that's one of those things. I definitely noticed it. I never could tell. Is that the Luke Skywalker theme or just basically the Star Wars heroic theme? Because I know it was used sometimes in the prequels, too. But they always run the risk of overdoing it, don't they? And here, I thought they did it right. It was a nice callback. It, again, is one of those times that made me wish that they would come out with these Clone Wars episodic soundtracks, put them on iTunes. Let me just pay a few bucks per episode to get the scores, because it was a wonderful way they merged that theme in with the rest of the episode's music.
And you know what the music did for me was it did make the battle seem a little bit more poignant. Like the battle meant something more. Like it just wasn't another battle in the Clone Wars series, that this was for the fate of this world. You know, when they bring in the music score and all of the lasers and the big battle, it just made it seem a little bit more enjoyable for me.
Yeah, musically, this episode was great. Now, story, kind of odd, but this battle did have some very interesting moves in it, particularly when the prince meets up with three Mon Cals who I guess were his personal bodyguards, because for about a minute they kicked butt until they met up with Riff and his exploding knives.
I loved this. I was so happy, first of all, that he finally armed himself to go into battle instead of just toothed himself to go into battle.
Toothed himself. Nice.
The fact that it was an exploding knife, I mean, I kind of saw it coming because it flashed and beeped. But man, I did not expect that level of violence. I didn't expect him to blow people up. When the episode started, it said it was like TVPG for moderate violence. I consider giblets of warriors beyond moderate violence.
I have to agree with you, Arnie, that the explosions didn't, or even the some of the warriors getting blasted in the back wasn't as violent as when he clicked the knife and stuck it in a body, you know. And even my son, I was watching it with my son. He was like, oh, you know, because it kind of, you know, sticking a knife, getting stabbed, getting shanked is really violent. And he was just shanking him in the chest, shanking him in the back, you know. And I was kind of like,
That is very true, Baron, because I know from reading about animation history and talking with Don Gluten things, there are certain things you couldn't do in cartoons, especially if it's realistic. Like in the 90s, X-Men and Spider-Man cartoons, they couldn't have guns that shot bullets because kids could go out and get guns that shot bullets. So you had laser guns because you couldn't have that. You could have fantasy violence. It's the same thing with Wile E. Coyote and the Roadrunner. Wile E. Coyote can try to drop an anvil on the Roadrunner's head because kids can't pick up an anvil and drop it. It's too heavy. But you couldn't have Wile E. Coyote getting the Acme machete and chopping up the Roadrunner because a kid could find a knife and start chopping up the baby brother. This is realistic, reproducible violence. So if children don't know the difference between reality and fantasy, this could be bad. I mean, you hear about that, don't you? Where like the 5-year-old sets the baby on fire because they saw it on TV and they don't know.
Or putting the baby in the microwave or the dryer or something like that. Yeah, because they saw it on television. Yeah, it's the same thing. You know, I'm just going to be real nice to my son for the next couple weeks.
Got some exploding knives around the house.
He probably doesn't have the exploding knife, but the knife alone is bad enough. I mean, don't get me wrong. As an adult viewer of Clone Wars, I was appreciating this. It was more Star Wars-y to me, more PG-level violence. But as we always talk about on Republic Forces, where does it draw the line? When, what age group is it going for? This is reproducible violence that is not appropriate in my mind for children under the age of like 7, because they might not know enough to not try to reproduce this on a playground with like a butcher knife.
I'm glad you drew the line at 7, because he just had his birthday at 7. So I'm like 7, not 9.
Would you agree with me? I mean, I don't have kids.
I would totally agree. I mean, kids see this stuff and they go out and they try to play it and they don't think about the repercussions. It's not that they're going to get mad and they're going to get a knife and they're going to stab. And then they're trying to imitate what they see. Kids going to pick up a sharp stick or something and say, hey, we can act like that scene where that guy stabbed that other guy. And that's why they don't show it to that age. This week, I think we found that line is definitely a lot older for Clone Wars than we thought it was. And they go back and forth. Last season premiere, we couldn't see Asajj kiss the clone. This season, well, not the premiere, but the third airing episode of the season, we get knives stuck into people that explode. And then we get one of our main villains explodes and we see his severed head float by.
Can I just say, they really missed an opportunity, because some of our listeners pointed out that they had the Jaws theme last week and everything. The prince, when he's aligning that gun, was so Roy Schneider. Why didn't he say, smile, you son of a bith?
That would have been. I mean, it was such a Jaws moment that I can't believe they didn't have him say something.
And Bith! I mean, the Cantina alien is a Bith! It would have fit so well!
I mean, yeah, we're already gonna dance around that line of what Aegis is for. Let's just go with it.
I wasn't as surprised as much by the severed head. That didn't bother me as much as, like, raining bloody chunks down around him. Like, that was really surprising. I thought it was cool, but it was just kind of had this moment of, wow, they're showing kids, like, I mean, granted, it doesn't look like blood as much in the water, but it was there.
See, I was just so into Jaws because at the end of the movie Jaws, which was PG, they blew up the shark in a very similar fashion that, yeah, I expected the giblets of shark because that's exactly how it was in the Spielberg film.
It wasn't the explosion or the giblets that got me. It was the dead eye, the glazed over white eye in the severed head. That really brought it over the top for me. I'm like, oh, okay, this guy's dead, you know. And that was more kind of horrific for me. It was just the dead eye that was floating, you know, in the head. I thought it was really cool.
Yeah, there's no there's no coming back for this guy. He's not going to have any Boba Fett type stories where, no, he didn't die, he swam away at the last minute, or that was another. No, that he was all kinds of dead.
Took an explosion to get Riff Tamsin out. But, you know, did you notice, anybody notice that after they started the attack or initially, the other three Karkadons were kind of just taken out with laser blasts? And I thought it was kind of established last show that Riff Tamsin could take a few laser blasts, right? But his friends just boom, 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 1, 2, 3, got taken out.
Yeah, that was, I'm trying to, who was it? Somebody took the blaster and just boom, 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 shot all three of them. And was it the prince? It was the prince. It was as soon as they gave him a gun. That was the first thing he did. He shot those three. Maybe they have less armor. That's maybe.
He's the Arnold Schwarzenegger of Karkadons.
Am I the only one who thought Jar Jar was killed? Because there's a Gungan shot in the back. And I'm like, they couldn't just kill Jar Jar. He's in episode 3.
We said this last season, the way that Clone Wars could totally be awesome for everybody would be if they just went the South Park route and Jar Jar died every episode. That would warm every fan's heart just a little bit. But I think that was just random Gungan getting shot in the back, kind of like random Quarren and random Mon Cal getting shot. There was a lot of on-screen deaths, not kind of off to the side or insinuated, but there were some blatant blasting in the middle of the screen going on.
I guess I just forgot the other Gungans were around because the only one we'd seen all episode was Jar Jar, and I guess I am speciest because underwater, all Gungans look alike to me.
It's all right. As long as you tell them that underwater, they can't hear you, so they won't think anything of it. Now, we had no continuity corner this week because this didn't affect anything. But we did have one voicemail.
Hi, RFRN. This is Ben Devis on the forums. And let's see, where do I start? Prisoners. Overall, I enjoyed it. I mean, it wasn't, I can't say it was the favorite of this 3-episode arc. Well, actually, I don't know if there really is a favorite in all these episodes. Probably the first one, Water War, I think. But I liked in Prisoners, how they had, although the method at the first point wasn't exactly the clearest thing, how they had Ahsoka and Lee Char just throw themselves right in with all the prisoners and get taken to Tamsin, which ended up leading to the Quarren and Mon Calamari joining forces. That, in the end, was nice, because I read on the forum, someone said that if Lee Char didn't do all those things himself, he was the last line of that royal bloodline. So if he didn't do it himself, then he might as well just be fish bait, because there wouldn't be any hope for him. But, let me see. There's so many things that I didn't like with this episode. I don't know where to start. The Gungans, I guess they're the biggest thing. The Gungans didn't help at all. They were Jar Jar and, what was it, Leone? Those two, they're just, I can't take that entire race seriously thanks to those two. And which reminds me of the preview for next week. Oh my gosh, I wish they would just take Jar Jar out of this whole Clone Wars series. But the Gungans, and they never bring back the Hydroid Medusas, which I guess is good because they didn't do hardly anything in Gungan Attack. And the only thing left that sticks out in my mind is how they get rid of Tamsin. I mean, you could tell, well, for those who have he's seen Jaws, that's a direct call out to Jaws. I mean, shark swimming at him, he blasts the explosive charge and bye bye shark. And I was actually surprised that they showed his lifeless head floating down. But which I'm glad, actually, because the kiddiness in past seasons has been quite annoying. But that the way they took him out, it just didn't sit right. I mean, I know they would have had to do something with him, but he was one of the villains who actually kept his menace throughout these episodes. But I don't know, kind of disappointing to see him go out that way. But Oh, other than that, I love the podcast and looking forward to next week's Clone Wars and your guys' coverage on this past episode. Take care. Bye.
So this one, he ended like Jaws 1. You think he'll come back and end like Jaws 2 and they'll get him to bite into an electric wire and then they'll do one that's in 3D? And
I'm looking forward to Jaws the Revenge, where Jar Jar's mother starts having visions. And it's a psychic connection between Jar Jar's mom
and the shark.
Who would be the voodoo priest?
That would probably be Kit Fisto. Doesn't he look a little Rasta, you know? I guess Kit Fisto plays the Mario Van Peebles role.
Oh, you know what? I know something we skipped. We so skipped this. We know now why Kit Fisto has had that South African kind of accent going on. So that he could, in this episode, say, "Eels, very dangerous. You go first." No. But it was just like John Rhys Davies in Indy, except he said eels, not asps.
I did not realize that. That's awesome. I like that quote a lot more now.
He just seemed a little bit drunk or something because he did not "eels, very dangerous." Oh, and not really bothered by it. You know, he was kind of, you know, making the jokes and, you know, it worked better if you weren't less talking. And it's like he didn't seem so, you know, like, this is a fight for this world's freedom.
No, I didn't really think about it like that, but maybe that's it, Barrett. Now, we did get a whole host of previews. I said like three different ones for next week. We've got the one where it's Anakin and Dooku talking on, I think, StarWars.com. Cartoon Network has one where it's Jar Jar and General Grievous talking. And then apparently there is another that I haven't seen yet.
At the end of the episode I watched on Cartoon Network, they had another like this season on the Clone Wars, but there was hysterical because it was like, in addition to all the seriousness, we also have some fun. And then they showed like this tiny race of like midget aliens. And then one of the clones goes, "Oh, it's another one of these planets." I was like, that line right there was better than anything I saw this whole episode.
I just can't get behind the Ewok-ish type of characters, you know? It just doesn't, for me, it just doesn't make sense. I don't find that funny, you know? There's nothing amusing about little people trying to go up against more technological enemy for me.
Well, I mean, it's Ewoks. It's a question of how it's handled. I would much prefer the series to have more of a self-sense of humor rather than being so serious. I mean, come on. You've got Bruce the Shark as a villain. If you made it something winky to the audience, like, "We know this is silly, laugh with us," I would take it a lot better than if you try to really make it dangerous and eerie. I will definitely roll with this episode if they're looking at us going, "Yep, this is a joke."
You say that now, but wait until Gulliver's Travels. C-3PO's travels happen, and they're just winking at us like they have something in their eye.
But they're going, as we saw from a couple of previews next, it sounds like they are going to classic literature this season for their stories dealing. Because as far as I can tell, next week's episode, something happens to the Gungan leader where he's either before or shortly after he has agreed to help the Separatists attack the Naboo. Something happens to him, and oh, he looks just like Jar Jar. Jar Jar's going to fill in for him. So we've got a little Prince and the Pauper, 8,000 other bad 80s Disney sitcoms where people look alike and switch places. They're stretching it for original stories. Jaws. So yeah, apparently we're just going to take from everything that's worked in the past. I can't wait, honestly, for the episode where Anakin makes a wish that he doesn't exist, and then somebody goes through and shows him what his life would be like, what everybody's life would be.
Qui-Gon the Ghost.
There you go. Qui-Gon will show him what everybody's life would be like if he didn't exist. And then by the end, he'll have a change of heart and want to exist. And, oh, you've been here all along.
And they'll get Liam Neeson back to record those lines. Of course, he still won't record that episode 3 voiceover, but he'll record the lines for the It's a Wonderful Force Ghost.
Anakin's buying Christmas geese for everyone.
What about the episode where Obi-Wan doesn't want to celebrate Life Day? And then he's visited by 3 Force Ghosts.
See? Or just... This scares me very much because the more little bits I see of this coming season, it seems to be some very unoriginal story.
I'm going
to
say this. I'm going to go out and defend this because growing up on a steady diet of 70s and 80s television, I mean, I remember the episode of Laverne and Shirley where Laverne went to sleep on a sofa saying, I wish I was never born, and it happened. And I think the same thing happened in Family Ties. I mean, I came to know these classic stories first through their cartoon and sitcom representations. Now, because this is Star Wars and a little bit more sacred to me than Laverne and Shirley, I wanted to see it done really well in a way that fits the universe, but I am not opposed to it. And I'm going to throw out one of, I think, the fan favorite EU books, Shatterpoint, which is a direct taking of the classic Joseph Conrad Heart of Darkness or Apocalypse Now, which is a movie adaptation of Heart of Darkness, really. So you can do it. Now, personally, I found Shatterpoint to be too much of a Joseph Conrad thing. I actually stand against the fans who like throw that down as the best book of all time. I liked it, but I thought it was a little too much. But it can work, and it can work in Star Wars. It's all a question of how it's done. I refuse to dismiss anything out of hand before I see it just based on concept.
I can go with that. I can go with that. And I just wish I had a Joni and Chachi reference to beat your Laverne and Shirley. To try to one...
Because Joni and Chachi trump Laverne and Shirley?
Just to try to one-up you on obscurity. I still drink Coke and milk to this day, though.
And I still put my glove on moving rows of bottles and wave it goodbye.
I don't know what any of you guys are talking about anymore.
you're too young.
All right. So that's it for this week. I do want to thank Jen, Arnie, and Barrett for joining me to discuss the end of our Mon Calamari arc.
Thank you for having me, Dan. Maybe sometime you'll let me back on again to discuss. And until that time, just to remind listeners, they can hear me talk Star Wars collecting over at Star Wars Action News at swactionnews.com. Also, the month of October, Now Playing Podcast is reviewing the Hannibal Lecter films. If you're into those types of things, if you like Jaws, maybe you like Hannibal Lecter. They both eat people. You can hear that at nowplayingpodcast.com. And if you like Marvel, we're discussing Marvel collecting at Marvelicious Toys at marvelicioustoys.com.
And if you did enjoy our discussion of the War on Mon Cal and you'd like to hear more around that kind of subject, there was an episode about a battle on Mon Calamari of the Star Wars Clone Wars micro-series, which we just wrapped up our retrospective of this past summer. So I encourage you to go look up those episodes and download them if you haven't gotten a chance yet. So that's going to do us for this week. I want to invite everybody to come back next week when we will talk about the latest episode of Clone Wars. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Rockstar. See everybody next week.
See you next time. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to Republic Forces Radio Network. Remember, we want your thoughts on the next episode of the Clone Wars series. You can leave us a voicemail at 415-508-JEDI every week from the time the new episode airs, and voicemails received by 1 a.m. Sunday morning may be included in our next episode. You can find our reviews of previous Clone Wars episodes, as well as our summer series reviewing the classic droid cartoon series, at our website, www.republicforces.com. And be sure to listen to our other Star Wars podcast, Star Wars Action News, covering all aspects of Star Wars collecting, from figures to high-end collectibles to Star Wars Band-Aids. Republic Forces Radio Network is hosted by Jerry, Arnie, Dan, Jen, Barrent, and Nathan P. Butler of StarWarsFanWorks.com. Republic Forces Radio Network, RepublicForces.com, and Star Wars Action News are not affiliated with Lucasfilm or any other official Star Wars-related company. Star Wars, and all of the Star Wars universe contains are copyright and trademark Lucasfilm Limited, and no infringement is intended. Republic Forces Radio Network is a production of Venganza Media Incorporated, copyright 2011, all rights reserved.
Nosferatu, what is the guy's name? The Quarren leader? Nosorai? Help me here. Nosu?
I'm looking it up. I don't actually have
Nosor.
It right in front of me. I like Nosferatu. Let's just go with that. It was too much. I hung up on.
Sorry.
Oh, was my pun too bad that I got hung up on?
I tried to unmute to laugh, and I accidentally hit end call. Like, that's just too far, Arnie. I can't have that. None of those shenanigans.
This is my favorite joke of the show. Smile, you son of a bitch, and then I get hung up on. What movie is it where like an alien spits phlegm on somebody's face and they start to suffocate and somebody has to pull it off of them?
That was X-Men.
X-Men. Yes, that's what I was thinking of with the whole loogie scene.
Kind of funny that the guy who just had to watch all the Marvel movies can't remember that it was X-Men, but that's all right.
I watch a lot of freaking movies.
You do.
It's like Toad out, Daredevil in.
Actually, you haven't watched X-Men yet, have you?
Yeah, we did that last.
Oh, yeah, you did. You did that with, yeah, you did. My bad.
So next time you say, I'm the biggest fan of Now Playing, we know you're not.
No, I never say that. I never say that. I listen.
Oh, so you're not a fan of Now Playing.
Wow, apparently we should do these at like 12:30 every week. We'd be over a lot sooner.
9:30 for me.
Well,
Sunday.
Hey, yeah, but now you got nothing to do the rest of the day
except enhance Swan.
Except enhance Swan.
So something must have happened between now and then for them to continue fighting for the separatist cause.
Are the Quarren steps?
I don't know that we know that. They weren't on Mustafar for Anakin to kill. That was like the Gungan and the short little chick and the
Gungan
nipple, or not the Gungan, the that was wish fulfillment. Anakin goes and kills the Gungan.
If you two break into the song and dance for the intro of that show at C6, I will tape it for posterity.
Baron and I going down the aisle at C6. Shamil, Shamazel.
Dun, 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 incorporated. Dun, 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 dun. We're gonna do it.
On your mark, get set and
go now. Something like
da, 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 we're the show now.
We're gonna make our dreams come true. Doing it our way.
I'd like to take this opportunity to deeply apologize to Reverend Strone for encouraging any singing on this show.
I'd like to take this opportunity to deeply apologize to Jen.
I just like
for aging her 15 years.
A non-Nathan episode in which there's a duet.
He'll be so crushed that he missed it. Really.